Welcome to episode 107 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for Monday, September 15th, 2008. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, we begin with a ton of news, including guess who's returning to professional road racing, lots of changes in the Pro Peloton, a product recall, how the Lehman collapse affects cycling, and much, much more. Following the news, a report on my French Alps trip, the Quark Cinco power meter review, upcoming events, geocaching meets cycling for a cure, and PodSafe cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. This week's episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible.com is the internet's leading provider of spoken audio entertainment, providing digital versions of tens of thousands of audiobooks for download to your computer, iPod, or MP3 player. For your free audiobook, sign up today at audiblepodcast.com/cycling. We thank Audible for their support. Welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. Great to have you with me. This is a busy time of the year. Just finished the trip in the French Alps, then I had a week back at work and then hosting a conference out of town, but I'm glad to be back with you. And then coming up, of course, it's Interbike, and something I wanted to tell you about. Now remember, the Interbike trade show is perhaps the industry's largest cycling trade show. It takes place in Las Vegas every year. Of course, used to take place in Anaheim, California, but now it's in Las Vegas, and it will take place this year, September 24th through the 26th at the Sands Convention Center in Las Vegas. And of course, the 22nd and the 23rd are outdoor demo days. I will be there. I will be podcasting daily as usual, but a couple of extra special things that are going on at the show. First of all, Wednesday, September the 24th, is your opportunity to watch me and the spokesman, the folks who do the Cycling Roundtable podcast with me. We will be live on Interbike TV, and you'll be able to watch that from home or the office live on Wednesday, September the 24th at 1 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Go to interbike.com and you'll find all of the information there. And if you will be in Las Vegas on Thursday, September the 25th, there's a great event, actually two great events going on. First of all, that's the evening of the USA Criterium Finals taking place in downtown Las Vegas, Nevada. And in addition to that, really cool thing that goes on every year, it's the Industry Cup. And that's the time when folks within the bike industry get to race against each other on a Criterium course. But even better than all of that, I've teamed up with BikeHugger.com and CommuteByBike.com. And together, we are putting together an event that we're calling Mobile Social Interbike. This is your opportunity to meet and greet some of your favorite cycling bloggers and podcasters, and also have a chance to do a little bit of an urban ride. We will be meeting at 6 p.m. outside the Sands Convention Center and riding from there to Mandalay Bay, which will be the site of the USA Criterium Finals. And then once we get there, well, thanks to our sponsors, including Sportgenic, Ibex, Novara, Jensen USA, Crumpler, and others, we will be putting on a VIP tent and hospitality area where you can come by, meet us, get there early, because we're going to have about 100 drink tickets and hopefully a bit more. We'll be able to provide you with some liquid libations while you get the chance to watch some great racing, socialize with your favorite bloggers, podcasters, and manufacturers, and other cycling enthusiasts. And even better, we're also going to have a raffle for some giveaways. This is going to be a great event. I'm really excited about it. It's the first of what I hope will be many. And of course, there's plenty of details on my website at www.thefredcast.com. So don't forget my daily podcast next week from Interbike. Don't forget to watch me live on Interbike TV Wednesday at 1 p.m. And don't forget to come down to the meet and greet, the Mobile Social Interbike. So lots of good stuff going on next week. Stay tuned for all of that. Put it on your calendar. But first, let's get to the news. It's been a while. I've got a lot to tell you. But before I tell you anything, let's hear from a famous former professional cyclist and hear what he has to say about the news.
Hey, everybody. I know there's been a lot of reports in the media today about a possible return to racing. I just want to let you know that after long talks with my kids, the rest of my family, close group of friends, I have decided to return to professional cycling in 2009. The reason for this is to launch an international cancer strategy based on the fact that we lose 8 million people around the world to this disease, more than AIDS, malaria, and tuberculosis combined. I will announce the entire initiative as well as the other plans for the comeback on September the 24th at the Clinton Global Initiative in New York City. So until then, take care and live strong.
Well, if you didn't recognize that voice, let me cue you in. That was world famous 7-time winner of the Tour de France, none other than Texas's own Lance Armstrong. For several days leading up to this official announcement, there were rumors swirling in the media, starting with a story that appeared in Velo News that indicated that they had advance warning of a Vanity Fair article that was about to come out that said that Lance Armstrong would be returning to professional cycling. And then came the announcement from the man himself, and he is indeed returning to professional cycling, talking about racing perhaps 5, maybe 6 races in 2009, including perhaps the Tour of California, the Dauphiné Libéré, and of course, the Tour de France. Now, as you can imagine, there were a lot of reactions to Lance's announcement. But first, the question was, why on earth would Lance return to professional cycling? Well, first of all, as you heard in that snippet from the video that is on Lance Armstrong's own website, Lance wants to return to continue to keep awareness high for the fight against cancer. Obviously, Lance being a cancer survivor himself, perhaps one of the world's most famous cancer survivors, he wants to make sure that that stays within the forefront of everyone's minds. Now, another reason that was cited was that perhaps Lance wants to refute once and for all the rumors that his wins in the Tour de France were aided perhaps by doping products and the fact that maybe he and his doctors were just a bit smarter than the anti-doping agencies that were out there looking to keep the Tour de France and other cycling races clean. So the talk is that Lance would undergo additional, stricter testing, much like the things we've heard from Team Highroad, now Team Colombia, and of course Team Garmin Chipotle, and their very high-profile additional testing efforts, and that then Lance would post his drug testing results online for all the world to see. Now, of course, the problem with that is that if Lance is less than successful in his return to professional cycling, well, that might beg the question. If Lance is as clean as he's shown in all of these tests, as we assume he would be in all of these tests, yet he doesn't have the success that he achieved in his previous years, specifically his previous 7 Tours de France, well, then does that say or does it indicate that perhaps he might have been doping? I personally am worried about this. I think it might backfire on Lance if he isn't as dominant as he has been in the past. And of course, lots of questions come up. If Lance returns to professional cycling, it seems that everyone figures that he would return to his former director sportif, Johan Bruneel, now at Team Astana. Well, let's look at who's on Team Astana. We have a former Tour de France champion, Alberto Contador, and a Tour de France contender, former podium individual, Levi Leipheimer. Where does that put Levi and Alberto? If he goes to Astana, they stay on the team. Who is the team leader in the Tour de France? And does this mean that they're now relegated to the role of lieutenant, where both of them had planned on the possibility of being able to win the 2009 Tour de France after Astana was banned in 2008. So a lot of questions swirling about this, and as you can imagine, lots of reactions from around the world of professional cycling. For his part, Alberto Contador says, "It's good news for cycling. We would be delighted to welcome him with open arms at Astana. It's news that awakens your attention and will create a lot of interest." He then went on to say, "Sure, the two of us would like to win the tour and some kind of complication could develop." The man is the master of understatement. "But to arrive at that point would be a race in which different factors would come into play. For now, let's not think about those." Now, as for former team director of Lance, Johan Bernil, he said, "My relationship with him," meaning Lance, "goes beyond the professional rider-director relationship. I don't see myself running a team and having to race against him. I cannot imagine him being on another team. He won't have a problem finding a team, but it's clear that the relationship we have means that I can't allow him to go to another team. It would be nice to be a part of this, but Astana is my team. This is what I built, so there's no way I will quit." Speaking about Contador, Bernil went on to say, "Alberto is the best rider at the moment, while Lance is on the comeback. These are things we will see about. We have seen on other occasions he's a great teammate. I think it will be a relationship filled with a lot of mutual respect, but we'll see." This year's Tour de France winner Carlos Sastre said, quote, "It's been a few years since he's been at the top level, but it wouldn't surprise me. He's a champion, and always, when you can have one more as a teammate, I would love that." And how about Tour contender Australian Cadel Evans? He said, quote, "Lance is coming back? Great. I like him as a rider and, of course, as an individual. I think he brings a lot to the sport of cycling. For now, though, there seems to be a lot of unknowns. What team will he ride for? What races will he do? Or, more importantly, I love this part, what races can he do? Having time out of racing normally makes it very difficult to come back. At Lance's age, especially, there's a dig for you. But if anyone can come out of retirement and win the Tour de France, Lance would be the man. I will be watching with interest. It could be someone else I have to watch leading into the Tour. At least I will not have as much media attention. That's a good thing from my point of view." Cadel Evans, never a man to mince words. And what about Christian Prudhomme? Now, Christian Prudhomme is the so-called boss of the Tour de France. He's the head of the Amaury Sports organization. And in the past, he has not minced words himself when he's talked about his suspicions about Lance Armstrong and his victories in past Tours de France. Here, he's very clear. Basically, he says, if Lance Armstrong agrees to abide by the rules, he'd be welcome in the Tour de France. He says, quote, "From the moment his team, which we don't yet know the name of, and he have agreed to the rules, particularly those governing doping and anti-doping, we would accept him. It's not possible for a rider not to abide by the rules, which are stronger now. The perception of how things are in this sport has changed. I would look at this comeback from the point of view of a sporting challenge. There are very few athletes who have succeeded, as Michael Jordan did. It would be a real challenge for him to come back after 3 years in retirement, even if he has finished second in a mountain bike race recently," talking specifically there about the Leadville 100, which Lance took second place to Dave Weens, who dominates that event every single year. Prudhomme goes on to say, quote, "On top of that, there's the question of his age. Armstrong will be 37 in a week's time. Of course, Raymond Poulidor finished second in the Tour at 38 in 1974 and third in 1976 when he was 40. But in any case, it's only mid-September. There's a long way to go before the start in Monaco next July." And that is true. And this story is going to have legs from here until there as we watch Lance progress. And he's going to be under the media microscope. There's no doubt about that. But wait, there's even more reaction to Lance's return. We've talked here on the show in the past, specifically in 2007, about the attitude of some of the German broadcasters and their reaction to the doping that's taken place in the Tour de France. Well, German television network ARD, which along with its competitor in Germany, ZDF, publicizes and televises the Tour de France in Germany, well, they say that they are, quote, "not amused with Lance's return or possible return to the Tour de France. Head of communications for ARD, Rolf-Dieter Gantz, told Sunday's edition of Die Welt, quote, "For us, Armstrong is a piece of the past we don't want to see again. When we renegotiate the contract with the Tour de France, we will certainly sit around the table with Christian Prudhomme and make it clear to him we are not amused to hear about Armstrong's plans. The future belongs to young riders, certainly not to Armstrong's generation, which we had hoped to have seen the last of." Strong words from the German network ARD. And finally, one of Lance's teammates, someone that he has credited in his books with being a key person in his victories in the Tour de France, that's José Luis Chechu Rubiera, who's now 35. Well, he has been contemplating retirement at the end of the Vuelta a España next week in Spain. Nevertheless, Chechu is excited at the prospect of possibly racing with Lance yet again in 2009, and he tells VeloNews, quote, "I had convinced myself that I was finished with cycling, but now there's an offer on the table for me to stay with the team for one more year. I enjoyed the best years of my career with Armstrong, and if he's coming back, I might want to be around to see that." So lots of reactions to the possibility of Lance Armstrong returning to the Tour de France in 2009. But wait, there's another rider who is also now contemplating his return to the Pro Peloton and possibly the Tour de France in 2009. And who's that? None other than disgraced Tour de France winner Floyd Landis. The rumors are that Floyd Landis is in negotiations with a group called Momentum Sports Group for a team that they will be putting together in 2009. Now, the comeback was first reported by cyclingnews.com, and Floyd Landis does not seem to be returning messages from anyone, either via telephone or email. Floyd's suspension for the doping offenses for which he was tried and convicted in the 2007 Tour de France, well, it is ending soon, and as a result, there is a possibility that he will return to the Pro Peloton in 2009. Of course, whether French Cycling Federation rules and or Christian Prudhomme will allow him back in the Tour de France remains to be seen. I'll try to keep you posted on more information on the Floyd Landis story as it develops, but of course, remember, despite the fact that Johan Bernal is saying that he would like Lance Armstrong back on Team Astana in 2009, there are no guarantees that that is what Lance will do. There are rumors out there that Lance may form a Team Livestrong, that he won't accept any salaries in 2009 for racing, and who knows, could you imagine Lance Armstrong and Floyd Landis on the same team? Now, that's just a bit of pie-in-the-sky speculation, but stranger things have been known to happen. We'll keep you posted right here on the Fredcast. Well, in addition to all of this news about Lance Armstrong and Floyd Landis, there is other news as far as lineup changes in the 2009 Pro Peloton. First, Team Gerolsteiner is folding at the end of the season simply because they have been unable to find a sponsor. So that's unfortunate. We'll see where those riders go. But there is a new team on the block, and this is Team Katusha. Katusha is a team that is backed by a consortium of Russian companies, including energy giant Gazprom and energy and real estate company Itera. On the team for 2009 are the likes of Robbie McEwen, Vladimir Karpets, Gert Stegemans, and Filippo Pozzato. And there were rumors up until a few days ago indicating that Tour de France winner Carlos Sastre might be leaving Team CSC Saxobank and heading to Team Katusha. Then the next thing we heard was, no, he's not going to Katusha. He's going to Garmin Chipotle. Well, in the end, it was revealed that Carlos Sastre is indeed leaving Team CSC Saxobank in 2009 and instead will be joining the brand new Team Cervelo. Who's Team Cervelo, you might ask? Isn't Cervelo the bike that Team CSC has been using all these years? Well, here's the press release about the formation of the new team. Cervelo, Zip, Speedplay, Vittoria, and 3T are pleased to announce Cervelo Test Team. Beyond racing, this new professional cycling team will provide a comprehensive, engineering-driven test ground for new product development. Quote, "We are proud to have played an important part in taking Team CSE from 14th to 1st in the team world ranking and in Carlos Sastre's Tour de France victory," said Gerard Vrooman, co-founder of Cervelo. Continuing, quote, "It was the dedication to excellence by both the equipment sponsors and the team that made it happen. Most of all, we appreciate the confidence Bjarne Riis had in us back in 2002 and thank him for these past 6 years. The financial realities of pro cycling today have caused a change in priorities for the team, and we respect that. Our main reason to work with a team is to develop new products, and how better to accomplish that than by owning the team." Joining Carlos Sastre on Team Cervelo will be ex-Australian professional rider Scott Sunderland, who has been a lieutenant to Bjarne Riis at Team CSC for many years. Sunderland saying, quote, "2008 will be my last as sports director with Riis Cycling. In 2009, I'll fill the position of sports manager with the new Team Cervelo." Continuing, "Since I joined Team CSC at the end of 2004, we have been very successful and secured remarkable maiden wins in my favorite races, the Spring Classics. That was an unforgettable experience. However, I've been blessed, or maybe cursed, with a restless and adventurous nature, and especially since our Tour de France victory, I have felt an increasing urge to move on to different challenges, get off the beaten track once again." So Scott Sunderland will be joining Carlos Sastre, and Tor Husoft, the God of Thunder, will be leaving and also heading to Team Cervelo. So it looks like Cervelo is looking to be a force to be reckoned with, along with the new Katusha team in 2009. A couple of other transactions. Bernhard Kohl, who surprised everyone with his performance in the 2008 Tour de France, is now going to Silence Lotto. Considering the fact that Robbie McEwen has gone to Katusha, I can understand that they may have some openings at Silence Lotto. Stuart O'Grady is now going to CSC Saxo Bank, and Stefan Schumacher is going to Team Quickstep. Now, there's a little bit of a backstory involved with this. Double world champion Paolo Bettini is furious about the fact that Stefan Schumacher is headed to Quickstep. And the reason for this is he was told earlier in the year that Quickstep could not afford to renew his contract in 2009. And as a result, Bettini has been considering retiring at the end of this 2008 season. Then he finds out that they've now offered a contract to Stefan Schumacher. According to Paolo Bettini, talking to Gazzetta dello Sport in Italy, quote, "The money was obviously for him, nothing for me. I feel offended. I didn't deserve this treatment. At this point, I exclude the possibility of continuing my career with them. I'll get other teams." That's not a good thing to do to a world champion and a high-profile rider like Paolo Bettini, who has been extremely loyal to Team Quickstep. I have a feeling that Bettini is probably right now planning on not retiring just so that he can hammer away at Quickstep all year long. That should be interesting. And finally, American racer Bobby Julich, who is someone who has been on the podium at the Tour de France, has now decided that he will be retiring at the end of the 2008 season. In a statement, he said, quote, "I've had a long career as a professional cyclist, and it has been an honor to be a part of a team like Team CSC for the last 5 years. Being on such a great team for so long, I know what it takes to be at the top level of this sport and realize that mentally, I'm not able to make the sacrifices that it takes to be there anymore. I hope to stay connected to the world of cycling because it has been my life and passion for 25 years, but I'm also keeping my options open. To continue to work for Bjarne and the team in some way would be great, and I would love it if that opportunity presented itself." Well, let's move away from transactions in the sport of cycling, and let's get to a couple of race results. Now, first of all, I want to back up a couple of weeks and finish off the medal count that we talked about in the 2008 Beijing Summer Olympics. First of all, several of you astute listeners pointed out the fact that I unintentionally slighted American Christian Armstrong and neglected to indicate the results of the woman's individual time trial at the Olympics. The gold medal, of course, going to Christian Armstrong. The silver medal going to Great Britain's Emma Pooley, and the bronze going to Switzerland's Karin Turig. Now, when we left off at the last Fredcast, we were just getting ready for the first ever BMX races in the Summer Olympics, and here are your results. In the men's race, the gold goes to Latvia's Maris Strombergs, the silver to the United States' Mike Day, and the bronze to Danny Robinson, also from the United States. In the women's BMX race, no surprise here for the gold medal. That goes to France's Anne-Caroline Chausson, the silver to France's Laetitia Lecorguil, and the bronze to the United States' Jill Kintner. In the mountain bike cross-country races, the men's cross-country, the gold medal went to France's Julien Absalon, silver to France's Jean-Christophe Perraud, and the bronze to Switzerland's Nino Schurter. And in the women's cross-country race, Germany's Sabine Spitz took the gold medal. The silver medal goes to Poland's Maja, you know, I'm going to butcher this name, don't you? Maja Woloskaya. And the bronze goes to Russia's Irina Kalintieva. And the final medal count in cycling, no surprise, that leading the medal count, Great Britain with 8 golds, 4 silvers, and 2 bronze. France got 2 golds, 3 silvers, and 1 bronze. The United States, 1, 1, and 3. Spain gets 2 gold medals, 1 silver, and 1 bronze. And Switzerland with 1 gold and 3 bronze. And one final follow-up to the Olympics. You'll remember that we talked about the case of the American cyclists who, when they got off the plane in Beijing, China, were photographed wearing those masks that would protect them against the pollution in Beijing, and who very shortly afterward issued an apology for their behavior, for having worn those masks and possibly insulted the Chinese people and also possibly disgraced the American team. Well, it turns out, as many speculated, that the cyclists at least are alleging that they were forced to make that apology, and they are now pushing for the ouster of the official who forced them to make the apology, as well as for new rules, new U.S. Olympic Committee rules that would require an athlete's representative be present at all meetings between athletes and USOC representatives. But as the story goes, when the cyclists arrived in China, they were wearing those masks that had been issued to them by the USOC and that had been recommended to them for quite some time by the USOC staff, including the USOC sports physiologist, Randy Wilbur. The cyclists said that after arriving in China and trying to get some rest, they were awakened, still jet-lagged and disoriented when they were brought to a meeting in this official's office, and they were told that they needed to issue an apology, that they had 2.5 hours to draft that apology, or they would be taken in front of a U.S. Olympic Committee panel that could expel them from the games, and according to the reports, it was implied to them that there was a very good chance that that panel would indeed expel them from the games. And so under this pressure, they issued the apology that led to worldwide media attention and also all sorts of undue pressure on them and peer pressure that occurred simply by walking around the athletes' village and having people point to them and talk about them behind their backs. You can imagine the situation that it created. Here's your Olympic Committee issuing you these protective masks, telling you to wear them. And then when you do, you happen to be photographed with them, you're forced to make an apology under the threat that you could be expelled from the Olympic Games. That's a bad situation all around. I can certainly understand their desire that that individual from the USOC be fired, and certainly understand their desire that this legislation be passed, making sure that future athletes are not put under this pressure without a representative of the athletes in attendance. Okay, at almost 30 minutes into today's show, we are finally up to Pro Tour results, and we've done so much racing news so far. I'm just going to go through these really, really quickly. August 20th through the 27th was the Eneco Tour of Benelux. It was won this year by Jose Ivan Gutierrez from Castaparna. Second place to Sebastian Rosler from Team Quickstep. Third place, Michael Rogers from Australia and Team Colombia. Fourth, Steen de Volder from Team Quickstep. And in fifth place, Andre Greipel from Team Colombia. In the middle of the Eneco Tour of Benelux, there was the one-day GP Tour West on August the 25th. First place there went to Pierrick Federigo from Bouygues Telecom. Second to Alessandro Bayon from Team Lampre. Third to David Lopez Garcia from Spain and Castaparna. Fourth to Alan Davis from Mitsubishi Jatarzi. And fifth to Jose Joaquin Rojas Gil from Castaparna. In the Tour of Germany, August 29th through September the 6th, it was won by Team Colombia's Linus Gerdemann. Second place going to Team Colombia's Thomas Lokvist. Third, Team Astana's Yanis Brockovich. And fourth to Team Astana's Daniel Navarro Garcia. And in fifth place, it was Pietro Ciaccioli from Credit Agricole. On September 7th, it was the one-day Vattenfall Classics. First place there going to Silence Lotto's Robbie McEwen. Second to Mark Renshaw from Credit Agricole. Third, Alan Davis from Team Quickstep. Fourth place to Murilo Antonio Fischer from Team Liquigas. And fifth, Jose Joaquin Rojas Gil from Castaparna. In the Pro Tour rankings, as a result of all of those races, sitting in first place, Alejandro Valverde from Spain with 123 points. In second, Damiano Cuniego with 104. And in third, Andreas Klöden with 96 points. In the team's classification, there's just 1 point separating first and second. Castaparna with 211 points, Astana with 210, and Scott American Beef in third place with 164 points. Spain is with 372 points in the nation classifications, Germany in second with 277, and Italy is in third with 271 points. The final Pro Tour event of the 2008 season, September 14th through the 20th, is the Tour of Pologne. After two stages in that race, the general classification is currently being led by Murilo Antonio Fischer, followed very closely in second place by Alan Davis. Third, Lars Eating Bach. In fourth, Andy Schleck. And in fifth, his brother, Frank Schleck. Jens Voigt is sitting in sixth place. Fabian Cancellara in seventh. Gustav Erik Larsson is in eighth. Mirko Lorenzetto is in ninth. And Kel Karlstrom is sitting in 10th place. This race ends this weekend, and that will end the 2008 Pro Tour season. Still not sure what the Pro Tour is going to look like in 2009. I'll have the results for you on the next episode of the Fredcast. And as soon as we've got more information on next year's season, I will keep you posted. Now, meanwhile, while there are plenty of Pro Tour riders in Poland doing the Tour of Pologne, most of the professional cycling fans' eyes are focused on the country of Spain because we are smack dab in the middle of the third of the three Grand Tours of the year. It's time for the Vuelta a España. Two-thirds of this year's race are now behind us and sitting in first place in the general classification from Spain and Team Astana, last year's Tour de France winner, Alberto Contador. 61 hours, 13 minutes, and 48 seconds after 15 stages of the Vuelta a España. In second place, his teammate from the United States, Levi Leipheimer, sitting 1 minute, 17 seconds behind Alberto Contador. In third, this year's Tour de France leader, Carlos Sastre from Spain and Team CSC, 3 minutes, 41 seconds behind Alberto Contador. Contador is looking good to complete this week with the Amarillo jersey on his shoulders and win this year's Vuelta a España, despite a crash in today's race. At the end of the race, he said, quote, "My left side is bruised, but I don't believe there will be any problems. Just a little body and paintwork." I'll have final results for you on the next episode of the Fredcast. And just a couple more results for you before we get to the rest of the news. First of all, in the U.S. Pro Cycling Championships, August 30th and September 1st, Dave Zabriskie won his third individual time trial red, white, and blue jersey, and Tyler Hamilton capping a comeback year for Rock Racing wins the road title and the right to wear the red, white, and blue jersey for the coming year. Meanwhile, in the Tour of Britain held September 7th through the 14th, Geoffrey Lecatre from France and Agree to Bell took first place in the final overall classification. Steve Cummings from Great Britain and Team Barlow World took second. Third, Great Britain's Ian Stannard. Fourth, Dan Martin from Ireland. And in fifth, Gabriella Bosicio from Italy. And finally, in the Tour of Missouri, which was held September 8th through the 14th, it was Garmin Chipotle's Christian Vandevelde taking the final winner's jersey at the end of that week-long event. Second place in the general classification, going to Michael Rogers from Team Columbia. Third, Svein Tuft from Team Symmetrics. Fourth, George Hincappy from Team Columbia. Fifth place, going to Tom Danielson from Team Garmin Chipotle. And with that, we will almost end our racing news, but one quick note from this year's Tour of Missouri, and that is that Blake Caldwell from Team Garmin Chipotle had to be airlifted out of the racing after he went down hard in a stage of this year's Tour of Missouri. A recent blog entry on his personal blog reads, "This isn't my first choice where to be writing a blog entry, but it will do. I'm writing from the hospital room where they've been taking great care of me. It was awesome to see Christian take over the leader's jersey in yesterday's time trial and hold on to it today. That did a lot to boost my spirits here. I'm hoping to be discharged from here either tonight or tomorrow. None of my injuries require more attention. They just need some time to heal up, and it's hard moving about. It looks like a broken pelvis, collarbone, sternum, and a lung contusion. It could have been a lot worse. I don't know how, by the way. Still, as there was a large drop-off to one side. Luckily, I don't have any memories of the crash, just the ambulance ride afterwards." And then he goes on to say, "Thanks to everyone for their supporting notes, flowers, etc. I really appreciate that. I'll be back soon, I promise." And it's in a subsequent blog entry, Blake goes on to say that he is home, he's recuperating, and we expect to see him back out racing very, very soon. Our best wishes to you, Blake, on a speedy recovery. And with that, we will complete the racing news for this episode of the Fredcast. Now, for those of you who have been familiar with and or raced in mountain bike races over the last decades, you're familiar with category names like beginner, sport, expert, semi-pro, and pro. Well, USA Cycling has now announced that they are getting rid of those classifications under which many of us raced for many years, and instead going to a new system, which includes things like Category 1, 2, 3, and Pro designations, making it more similar to the road racing categories. According to Lisa Nye-Saladin, president of the NORBA Board of Trustees, and a mountain bike race promoter for the Texas Mountain Bike Racing Association, quote, "This change has been discussed, studied, and considered in some form for the last 2 years. Ultimately, the NORBA Board of Trustees spearheaded this evolution in order to make racing more competitive and create a clear distinction between amateur and professional athletes. The names of the categories were also revised to better reflect the new levels of racing. The terms beginner, sport, and expert carry little relevance outside of the mountain bike community, which makes it difficult for sponsors and the public to relate. The simplicity of using numbered categories brings with it a universal understanding." For his part, a member of the NORBA Board of Trustees, Gary Fisher, said, quote, "We want bigger pro fields in the national calendar event so our racers can better prepare for international competition like World Cups and World Championships. Our pro fields are tiny compared to our European counterparts. We have the numbers in terms of ridership, but we've been referring to them as semi-pros." So this is an opportunity for American mountain bike racing to elevate itself and make its categories much more clear on the international racing circuit. So time to recategorize yourself. Go to usacycling.com for more information. Okay, going from racing news, let's do some product news. And first, unfortunately, I have another product recall to tell you about. This is from the Consumer Product Safety Commission, and this is for Data Forza handlebar stems. Now, there's only about 400 stems involved in the recall, but considering the fact that the top of the stem can crack, you can imagine that this is a pretty important one if you're somebody who has one of these stems. They've received 4 reports of incidents involving these stems, and so far, thankfully, no injuries have been reported. Now, this involves bikes with Data Forza black carbon fiber stems in gloss finish. The words Data Forza are printed on the stem, and those that are in the matte finish are not included in the recall. These were sold at bicycle retailers nationwide from January 2008 through June of this year on bicycles selling for between $4,300 and $8,700. Now, the stems were also sold separately for about $400. Obviously, stop using the bikes equipped with these stems immediately. Go back to the place where you bought it to get a free replacement stem. And if you go to the show notes at www.thefredcast.com, I've got links for both the data website's information on the recall, as well as the recall information at the Consumer Product Safety Commission's website. Earlier, we talked about the fact that next week is the Interbike trade show, but Europe has its version of Interbike, and that's the Bike Europe trade show, and that took place last week. And at last week's trade show, SRAM announced that they were going to be getting an infusion of cash from Lehman Brothers Merchant Bank. As many of you know, Lehman Brothers collapsed over the weekend, leading many in the bicycle industry to speculate about what will happen to this new investment from Lehman Brothers Merchant Bank on SRAM. Now, the speculation is that because LBMB is perhaps one of the biggest cash-rich enterprises of the Lehman Brothers enterprise, that this might actually survive, perhaps get picked off by some other financial institution, and therefore the SRAM investment will be just fine. So far, no word from SRAM on what this may or may not mean for them. If we learn anything, and perhaps we will at Interbike, I will pass it along to you. Moving on to general bike culture news, those of you who are cyclists in Philadelphia and have been looking for a place to lock up your bike now that gas prices are high and you're commuting back and forth to work into the store, Philadelphia Mayor Nutter announced that he would install up to 1,400 new bike racks in the city starting this month in an effort to, quote, improve the safety and convenience of bicycle travel in Philadelphia. Now, bike advocates say that the racks will make it easier for bike commuters to park their rides and would clear the clutter of chained bicycles from city sidewalks and reducing inconvenience for pedestrians when bikes are hitched to parking meters and under other poles. In addition, the mayor said that the William Penn Foundation will convene a working group to study the feasibility of, quote, a bike share program similar to the programs we've talked about here on the show in Paris, in Washington, D.C., and other places. In a prepared statement, the mayor said, quote, these efforts will go a long way to make Philadelphia the most bike-friendly city on the East Coast. Good news for those of you in the city of brotherly love. Hey, do you remember a couple of weeks ago we talked about the cyclist who took part in the Critical Mass ride in New York City, and the YouTube video clearly showed that he was body checked by a New York City police officer who then arrested him for assaulting the officer. Well, thankfully, a New York judge dismissed the charges against that cyclist, and this was at the prosecution's request. The man involved in this incident is cyclist Christopher Long. He's 29 years old, and he's from Hoboken, New Jersey. After the video emerged, it became clear that he was not the aggressor in this situation, but that perhaps the officer involved, Patrick Pogan, was indeed the aggressor in the situation. Now, Long's lawyer, David Rankin, after the hearing concluded, said, quote, we're just very lucky this videotape surfaced, and we're very thankful the DA's office did the right thing in dropping these charges. This was a case where the officer's sworn testimony was contradicted by the videotape. It raises serious questions about other cases that don't have the luxury of a videotape. And lest you be too surprised, there are hints that Long will indeed sue for the way that he was treated by New York City's finest. And finally, three stories that definitely point out that sometimes it can be dangerous to ride your bike. Take the case of middle school teacher Jim Litz of Missoula, Montana, who was riding his bike to school recently at about 25 miles an hour when he came over a rise and encountered a bear no more than 10 feet in front of him. Unable to stop in time, he ran smack dab into the side of the bear. The two rolled over, the bear over Litz's head, cracking his helmet and scratching his back before, possibly out of surprise, the bear ran away up over the hill and into the woods. Thankfully, the teacher's wife drove by shortly after the crash and was able to take her husband back to the hospital, and he's hoping to be able to return to teaching science at Target Range Middle School any day. And what about the man from the Caribbean island of St. Kitts? Glenn Webby was recently charged with not holding on to the handlebars with at least one hand while riding his bike, and he was fined $50 that was to be paid within 24 hours of the date of his conviction. Now, I don't know about you, but I frequently ride without any hands on the handlebars, especially if I'm sort of trying to stretch my back on a long ride. But in this case, the police in St. Kitts said, quote, "It is an offense to ride a bicycle without holding the handles with at least one hand. And this is so because the rider would have little or no control of the bicycle if he's not holding onto the handlebars. It's a safety provision in the law that ensures that riders have some control of the bike when it is in motion. If you don't have control, you run the risk of an accident and causing damage or injury to yourself or other road users or property." The police spokesman went on to say that the conviction is a perfect opportunity to educate the public on this aspect of the law and to caution cyclists against illegal and dangerous practices. Continuing, quote, "So we take the opportunity to admonish cyclists to observe the safety rule and always have at least one hand on the handlebars of the bicycle when it is in motion. Consider yourself admonished." And finally, this story from Worcester in the UK. Well, this one has to be read verbatim. A cyclist in Worcester had to be rescued by firefighters after she rode into the river while talking on her mobile phone. The woman, believed to be in her 20s, was cycling along Cleve Walk near Worcester Cathedral and South Quay at midnight on Sunday. A spokesman for Hereford and Worcester Fire and Rescue Service said the woman had been on the phone to her friend as she was riding. Quote, "She wobbled and swerved the bike down the embankment of the river through all the stinging nettles and ended up in the River Severn," he said. Continuing, "She managed to scream while holding the mobile phone and alerted her friend. Her friend then managed to ring 999 and we came out. Firefighters threw lines to the stricken cyclist and managed to pull the woman to safely. They also managed to drag the bike out of the river." Quote, "She was stung from head to foot and was in shock. We got the paramedics there and she was treated for shock, cold, and also the stings. This is a salutary lesson, if ever there was one," he said. "The lesson, of course, don't ride your bike into a river full of stinging nettles." Oh yeah, and get off the mobile phone if you're on your bike. Come on, people. And with that stinging story, we end the news for this edition of the Fredcast. Well, before we get to today's features, I just want to thank our sponsor, Audible.com. We've talked about Audible.com over the last couple of weeks. Audible is the single best resource for audio books with over 50,000 titles. And easily downloadable to your MP3 player, your computer, burnable to CDs, your iPod. You can take audiobooks with you anywhere, whether that's out on a bike ride, commuting to work in your car, on the train, in a bus, maybe just out mowing the lawn, or, well, winter's coming, snow blowing the driveway. You will find books on every imaginable topic, in every genre you can consider. And here in the United States, we're thinking a lot about politics and business these days. You can find books from Barack Obama to Sarah Palin, and of course, business books from Stephen Covey to Warren Buffett. If you can imagine the book that you'd like to read, chances are you'll be able to find it on audible.com. And the great thing is, simply because you're a listener to the Fredcast, they've got a great deal for you. You'll get a free audiobook and an introductory free membership to Audible simply by going to this special link. It's audiblepodcast.com/cycling. audiblepodcast.com/cycling, where you can get your free book and your free introductory membership to Audible. And the great thing is, even if you decide not to continue your membership with Audible, and I can't imagine once you try it that you wouldn't, you'll still get to keep that free book forever and ever just for trying Audible. Thanks so much to Audible for sponsoring the Fredcast, and thank you for going to audiblepodcast.com/cycling and supporting the show. You will not regret trying Audible. Well, as you know, a couple of weeks ago, I had the great pleasure of getting myself over to France and having the opportunity to climb some of the famous climbs from the Tour de France. And I remember as I was heading up the very first climb, the Col de la Fourclaze, that I came up with this silly pun, which my wife just thinks is ridiculous. And it goes something like this: you never forget your first col. And I have to tell you, you don't forget your first and you don't forget your eighth. I just wanted to share with you very briefly here, and I am still working on putting out those video podcasts for you. Just wanted to share with you a couple of moments from my recent trip to the French Alps and hopefully convince you that in August of 2009, you'd like to join us for our next trip for the Fredcast's famous climbs of the Tour de France. Now, my week started here in Salt Lake City, flew from here to New York, and then from New York to Lyon, France, where I took the high-speed TGV train to the beautiful town of Annecy on the banks of Lake Annecy, and was met by our tour coordinator, Hendrix Tours, from Europe, and was driven to our very first hotel. And one of the great things about that hotel is that when they found out that we were there for cycling and that many of us were Tour de France fans, they brought out their guest book and they showed us where it had been signed by the U.S. Postal Service team and Team Discovery when they stayed there for several Tours de France. And there was the signature of the man himself, Lance Armstrong, along with George Hincapie and many others. And there was even a room registration list showing which rooms the professional cyclists had stayed in. And that excited a lot of the folks that were on the tour because many of them stayed in the very same rooms as those cyclists. Well, from there, we rode up from Faverges, which was the site of our first hotel, to the beautiful town of Annecy, and then around the lake, and then up our very first col, the Col de la Fourclaze. And this one surprised a lot of us. We simply weren't ready for the elevation changes and the grades of the roads. You see, because here in the United States, a lot of our roads are simply engineered so that they have a grade of less than 7%. And when you get to some of these roads in the French Alps and you're talking about grades of 8, 9, 10, 12, 14%, in some cases, you simply aren't prepared for it. But we all got to the top of that very first col, back to our hotel, and then the next day, it was time for two more cols, the Col du Marais, which was probably the easiest climb of the week, and then the Col de la Coiffure, which was just an amazing, beautiful climb. The next day, the Col de Aravis, and then the Col de Saisy, and then the following day, two climbs which I know you've all heard of, the Col de la Madeleine and the Col du Télégraphe. Now, the Madeleine is a long climb, and I was glad on that day that I was climbing with several of the other riders on the trip, because I'm not quite sure I would have been able to make it up to the top of that one without some company and some camaraderie as we headed up that climb. And then up the Col du Télégraphe, and then a little descent down into the town of Valois, a beautiful ski town where we stayed the night. And it is at the base of the unrelenting, epic, beautiful, stunning, difficult, lung and leg burning Col du Galibier. Let me tell you, when we all made it to the top of that one, we were very relieved. And then a very long beautiful, fast descent from there to Bourg de Oisans, which is at the base of the Alpe d'Huez, and gave us our first glimpse of the famous 21 switchbacks to the ski station at the top. We stayed in nearby Auze-en-Oisans, and then the following day, we climbed the most famous, perhaps, of Tour de France climbs, the Alpe d'Huez and its famous 21 switchbacks. You'll remember, as you think back to my recent show number 100, and I played for you that clip from my very first episode of the Fredcast, in which I said I would never be able to climb the Alpe d'Huez. I am here to tell you, the Alpe d'Huez is no boogeyman. You can climb it. I can climb it. Listen, most everybody on my trip was riding a bike with very low gears, triple chain rings on the front, and the ability to just sit and spin. I was riding with a 5339 in front, a double chain ring, and no more than a 27 tooth on the rear cassette. And that was a special cassette that I put on just for this trip. I was able to make it up every single one of those climbs. And granted, as we talked about in the last show, I did indeed have the assistance of onlinebikecoach.com's Richard Wharton, who was able to train me for this trip. But I'm here to tell you that if you're listening to this show and you ride your bike just a couple of times a week, you too can train to get up to the top of these Tour de France climbs. There were several people on this trip, Pat and Dina, you know I'm talking about you, who were always at the top of every climb before everyone else. They are just physiological amazements to me. Nevertheless, I don't care if you are an average cyclist, you can make it up to the top of every one of these climbs. And if you are a cycling fan, and if you've watched the Tour de France, and even if you've just watched an Alpe d'Huez climb, you owe it to yourself to get on your bike and do these ascents. Number one, all along the way, you'll pass the road graffiti that is a testament to the riders that came before you. Names like Schleck and Sastre, even Landis and Armstrong. Cadel Evans, somebody on the Alpe d'Huez, had a kangaroo stencil. And all the way up the Alpe d'Huez, there were little kangaroos for Cadel Evans. And then as I was leaving Alpe d'Huez from the top and getting ready to go back to our hotel for our final dinner, I noticed a little bit of graffiti that read simply, "Burrito Power," for Garmin Chipotle's ascent of Alpe d'Huez this year. It is something to behold, and you really gain a newfound respect for the tour riders when you see and ride these climbs and have an idea of what the term suffering actually means. And for me, as I'm going up these things at 10 miles per hour or way less, and thinking about all of these professional cyclists actually racing up the Alpe d'Huez, thinking about guys like Marco Pantani and Lance Armstrong getting from the base of Alpe d'Huez, which starts out in some places at 14% grade in the first 3 or 4 kilometers, racing from that base all the way up to the top of the ski station at the top of Alpe d'Huez in 35 or 40 minutes. And considering what my time was, it really gives you a newfound respect for these guys. The scenery is absolutely gorgeous. The camaraderie on a ride like this is second to none. And I hope that many of you will consider, whether you go with me next year or you go with someone else, take the time, spend a little bit of extra time training on your bike over the next several months, and go to France next summer and ride these climbs. You will not be sorry. I've posted photos from my trip online, and you can simply find those at www.thefredcast.com. Go to the top of the page, and you'll find some little tabs up there. One of them says photos. Click that, and you can take a look at all of my photos. And over the next couple of weeks, I will be posting little video vignettes of what it was like on each day of our tour. I want to thank all of my friends who went with me on this trip, and especially Herman Hendricks from Hendricks Bicycle Tours. They have done an amazing job putting together custom tours for groups all around the world, and did an extra special job of making sure that everyone on this Fredcast tour had the time of their lives, and that everyone who goes with us in coming years will also have the times of their lives. go ahead and check it out, www.thefredcast.com. Click on that photos link, and over the next couple of weeks, I'll be providing you with the dates for next year's tour. Sign up early. I have a feeling this one's going to sell out. One of the interesting things about the trip was that I took my bike with me over to Europe, and parenthetically, for those of you who may follow my Twitter feed, what was kind of cool was I rented my bike case from my local bike shop here in Salt Lake City, Contender Bicycles, and they rent extremely strong bike cases, and I was really thankful for that because I was a little bit concerned about traveling internationally with my bike. I'd traveled domestically with it before, but never overseas, and so I was a bit concerned. When I brought the bike case home, opened it up, and started to pack my bike in there, I found a bunch of luggage tags from the previous user of the case. And lo and behold, who was that previous user? I kid you not, Salt Lake City's own Dave Zabriskie. Turns out Dave had used the very same bike case when he headed over to Beijing, China for the Olympics. That gave me a little bit of extra mojo to get up to the top of those climbs. But what was interesting to me when I got over to Europe was that I found out that I was the only one on the trip who had brought his own bike. And it's a bit of a hassle to take your bike over there, but honestly, I was really glad that I did because I knew that it fit me right. I knew all of the idiosyncrasies of the bike, and it just felt right to be on my own bike riding day after day for over a week's time. And what was also cool was that I had outfitted the bike specifically for the ride. As I mentioned earlier, I put on a special cassette, which had a larger ring in the back for climbing and a smaller ring in the back for descending, because I knew that some of those descents were going to be steep and I didn't want to spin out as I was headed downhill. But speaking of spinning, the other thing that I did to outfit my bike for the trip was I had the opportunity, and it turned out to be the good opportunity, to test a new product, a new power meter. Instead of bringing my power tap with me, I talked to the folks over at Quark, Q-U-A-R-Q. And you may remember that I spoke with Jim from Quark at the 2007 edition of the Inner Bike Trade Show. And he told me about the new power meter that he was developing called the Cinco, C-I-N-Q-O. Simply put, the Cinco puts the strain gauge for the power meter right in the spider on your cranks. And therefore, you can use any wheel set with your bike. And because the Cinco uses the Ant Plus Sport wireless technology, along with open source software, it's very compatible with a number of different head units or handlebar computers that you might be able to put on your bike. And so Jim was kind enough to send me a Cinco on a pair of FSA cranks that I was able to take with me to France and use on the ride. And so I was able to use my Mavic Kazerium wheels without the power tap hub and was able to use the Cinco for the power meter. And it gave me the opportunity to evaluate the Cinco as compared to all the other power meters that I've told you about over the last year. Now, what was great was, as I've told you before, I am a fan of convergence, the ability to have one unit that provides me with multiple functions. My iPhone, for instance. On my iPhone, it's a computer. It's an organizer. It's got my contacts, my calendar. It's got a GPS. It's got my iPod all in one unit. That to me, oh, and let's not forget a camera. That to me is convergence. And that's what I've been seeking on the handlebars of my bicycle for a number of years. I like having a conventional bike computer. I like having a GPS with a moving map. And I like having heart rate. And I like having a power meter. And for the last year plus, I've had two, sometimes three, even four devices on my handlebars in order to handle all of those functions. By fitting my bike with the Quark Cinco, I finally had the ability to have only one unit on my handlebars, and that's the Garmin Edge 705 that I reviewed about a month or so ago. Because the Garmin Edge 705 uses that Ant Plus Sport technology for wireless communication, the Cinco provides cadence and power data to the Garmin, while the Garmin heart rate monitor provides heart rate data, And the Garmin speed sensor provides speed data, while the GPS provides GPS location and moving map information. I now am able to display all of that information, display and store all of that information in one place, thanks to the fact that my bike is now outfitted with the Quark Synco power meter. Now, the Synco power meter is also compatible with the iAero from iBike Sports. Remember, we've talked about the iBike before. The iAero is their newest version, and I have a feeling they have some new products we'll be talking to them about next week at Interbike. Plus, Quark is working on an open source computer that they call the Quark Cranium, and that should be out any day. We'll be talking to Jim at the Interbike Trade Show to get more information about that. Now, let's talk a little bit about how the Quark Synco works. Obviously, in order to put it on my bike, I had to remove my existing Campagnolo bottom bracket and my Campagnolo cranks, put in a new FSA bottom bracket along with the FSA cranks outfitted with the Quark Synco. The Quark Synco has a strain gauge in it using ultra-low power electronics and this very high accuracy strain gauge. For me, once it was installed by my dealer, using the Synco was extremely easy. All I had to do was tell the Garmin to look for a power meter. It found the Synco. And then before every ride, when I was coasting, I needed to zero out the power meter. And we've talked before about some other units that have a very difficult and cumbersome calibration at the beginning of every ride. With the Synco, all I had to do was when I was coasting or descending, pedal backwards 3, 4, 5 revolutions. That zeroed out the power meter, and I was ready to go for the rest of the day. From what I could tell based on my previous power meter experience, specifically with the power tap that I normally ride with every day, the Synco seemed very accurate and providing readings very commensurate with what I've seen with other power meters I've used, specifically with the power tap. Now, obviously, I have reviewed other crank-based power meters before, specifically the SRM. And as you may recall, when I reviewed the SRM, well, I kind of panned it a little bit because I felt that I didn't understand why somebody would spend a recreational cyclist like you and me, why we would spend thousands and thousands of dollars for the SRM simply for the ability to be able to change rear wheels. Personally, this isn't an issue for me, and I've talked to several of you who have said that it's not an issue for you either. However, the Synco makes sense to me. It is lighter than, say, a PowerTap rear hub. It is much easier to install and takes up much less room on the bike than, say, the Polar power meter that I have previously reviewed. And based on the iBike that I reviewed previously, the Synco is more accurate and offers much easier setup and calibration at both the first time you use it and every subsequent time you use it. And despite the fact that it's crank-based, it's significantly less expensive than the SRM unit at a manufacturer's suggested retail price of just $1,195. This makes sense to me. Now, that price doesn't include the cranks, but many of you probably already have cranks that will be compatible with the Synco. According to Quark's website, in the first production run, the Synco will be designed for attachment to production crank sets with separate spider assemblies, including the FSA Team Issue, the SRAM S900, the Bontrager Race X Lite, and the Truvative Roulaire Carbon. Future production runs will include the FSA Chrono TT, the Cannondale SI Hologram, the Specialized S-Works Carbon, the Lightning Carbon, the Rotor Agilis, the FSA Carbon Pro Track, and I don't doubt this, Quark is going to continue working to try to work with more and more crank sets in the future. Now, initially, they'll only be working with a 130 millimeter bolt circle diameter, but in the future, they're looking at working with compact at 110 millimeter and track cranks at 144 millimeter. For me, when I used the Quark, I had basically no problems with it. I was very pleased with the accuracy and the readout on the Garmin. Quark says that they're talking about an accuracy plus or minus 2% or better. The only issue I had with it was an occasional low battery warning telling me that the battery on the power meter was running low. According to Quark, this is an erroneous reading and one that can be ignored or that can be fixed with a firmware update. Makes sense to me. Bottom line here, I was very, very pleased with the Quark. I'm hoping that I'll be able to continue to use it for a much longer test period. And if I'm able to do that, I will let you know. You can find more information at quark.us. That's Quark.us. I want to thank Jim from Quark for setting me up with this test version, and also thank Richard Wharton from Online Bike Coach for helping to set up the relationship between the Fredcast and Quark. It's a relationship that I hope will continue for many years to come, and I'm hoping to be able to bring you yet another interview with Jim from Quark from Interbike next week, as he can tell us about more developments with his company and future power meters. Once again, check it out, quark.us, Quark.us, and there are links in the show notes. I have one quick upcoming event to tell you about, and this one takes place just outside of Houston, Texas. Of course, all of us are thinking about those down there affected by Hurricane Ike, including my friends who live on Galveston Island and are still wondering about the fate of their house as they've temporarily relocated to Austin, Texas. So thinking about a lot of you down there in the Texas area. But by November 23rd, hopefully life will be back to close to normal in the area and that you will be able to take part in an event, again, on November 23rd at Foster High School in Richmond, Texas. It's Bike the Bend. Bike the Bend will feature three routes of 19, 32, and 59 miles. And by the way, Bike the Bend is a BP MS-150 recommended ride, and it benefits the Literacy Council of Fort Bend County. Sounds like a great charity to support. Pre-registration takes place by October 10th and guarantees you a current year Bike the Bend t-shirt. The cost for pre-registration is just $30 per rider, while registration at the event is $40 per rider. All proceeds will support the life-changing work of the Literary Council of Fort Bend County, whose mission is to end intergenerational cycles of illiteracy and generate community-wide literacy awareness. Riders, sponsors, and volunteers participating in Bike the Bend for Literacy are helping to unlock the potential for determined adults who want to pass a legacy of literacy on to their children. For more information about Bike the Bend or to request a sponsorship opportunity packet, please call 281-240-8181. That's 281-240-8181, or visit their website. There are links in the show notes. Well, speaking of a great cause and speaking of an MS bike tour, I wanted to tell you about something that those of you who are cyclists and geocachers might be interested in. Geocachers from Team Qualcomm in Southern California are participating in the 2008 Bike MS Land Rover Miramar Beta Bay bike tour from Orange County to San Diego. And this year, as a fundraiser, they've produced a GeoCoin as a fundraiser. Now, these coins are used as part of the GPS game geocaching. You can find more information on that at geocaching.com. These coins are 42 millimeters in diameter and 3 millimeters in thickness. The edge of the coin is engraved with trackable at geocaching.com, and they are being minted with two finishes. There will be only 250 coins made this year, and if they're successful, they'll commission a coin for next year, and I'm sure many years in the future. The cost of the coins, $9.50 plus shipping, and those shipping costs are estimated at $4.50 for the first two and 75 cents for each additional coin in the same shipment, and 100% of all proceeds will be donated to the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. I've put a link in the show notes to where you can get more information on these geocoins. So if you are a cyclist and a geocacher, I have a feeling that these may become collector's items. Get yours soon before they sell out. Well, that is going to do it for tonight's episode of the Fredcast. It's great to be back with you and great to be practicing podcasting again in advance of next week's marathon at Interbike. Don't forget, there's lots of ways to stay in touch with the Fredcast. And of course, next week at Interbike, one way to follow what I'm doing at Interbike is to follow my Twitter feed. Go to twitter.com/Fredcast and sign up to follow my Twitter feed to see all of the happenings that are going on at Interbike next week. Of course, you can always send me an email. The email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. And that's great for sending both text messages and audio comments that you record on your own computer that we can put up on the show. Again, thefredcast@gmail.com. Now, there's other ways to send audio comments. Of course, using the Fredcast listener hotline at area code 435-258-6FRED. That's 435-258-6373. Or you can Skype me at the Fredcast, or use any of the voicemail options that are available to you in the show notes. And of course, as always, don't forget to visit the website at www.thefredcast.com. Once I get those videos done, that's where you'll be able to see my video logs of my rides in the French Alps. Now, before we get out of here tonight, it is time, as always, for PodSafe Cycling Music. And this track was sent in by the band themselves. This was sent in by Andy, who's a member of the band. The band is called IM3. And by the way, for those of you out there who may be members of bands, or perhaps you know some bands who might have some music that might be appropriate for cycling, feel free to send your submissions, thefredcast@gmail.com. But Andy sent in this track, and I thought I'd play it for you today. This is the Manchester acoustic duo, IM3. The track is called Burning Me. I hope that you enjoy it. So, as we get out of here, just another quick reminder, don't forget Interbike next week to watch the spokesman live on Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and join us at the Mobile Social Interbike Thursday night, 6 p.m. at the Sands Convention Center, or 6:45 to 10 p.m. at Mandalay Bay as we enjoy the USA Criterium Finals and the Interbike Industry Cup. It should be a great time. Can't wait to see you there. But between now and then, between my Interbike shows and today, I hope you enjoy the music. But most of all, enjoy the ride. Only time will tell.
time will tell, time will tell. Only time will tell.